We will highlight the questions if we have omitted anything. That one goes up, goes to the Public Service Commission. If I take the first 18 choosing entities, or with the first DL also, which were very interested on the last time the manager promised us to also give us a certain about what are you doing about the all the extra that we have in the community. If you are unable to talk to that one, we'll talk to you and we'll see if you can get to the one. But it's one of also our shopping business and standards. Other than what you're basically presenting to us in terms of the compliance property. Is that your welcome? I will request you DM if there's anything that you like or overall robust, active, alive oversight without just box picking, but nevertheless, we were already in that time. On Anushi, I was just mentioning it because myself, I have another colleague. And that is still happening the time when I'm in the okay, that's a couple of things. We are still around a couple of things. Let me explain.
I'll give you the picture.
Thank you so much.
This presentation reflects the following matters regarding the public the strategic outcome oriented budget allocation, expenditure trends, and the 2018-19 annual performance plan, and key achievements for 2017-18. I think this key achievement, Honorable Chair, is meant to assist the committee to understand how far we have concluded our previous financial year, she tweeted the fourth quarter that I think we have just spoken about earlier from the Commission. The strategic plan was tabled in Parliament in March 2015, and the strategic outcome-oriented goals were subsequently refined and tabled in Parliament on 10th March 2016. But with regards to 2018-19 annual performance plan, it was tabled in Parliament on the 12th of March 2018. Just to indicate what are the strategic outcome-oriented goals of the Public Service Commission, which I think the portfolio committee is very much aware of, we might not necessarily need to spend time on it, okay, Honorable Chair. I think we can sit on our budget for 2018-19 to 2020-21. Honorable Chair, in terms of the budget for the Public Service Commission for 2018-19, we have our 202 million, the total is 264 million, but for compensation of employees, which takes the biggest chunk of the Public Service Commission's budget, we have 202 million. And then we have, in terms of goods and services, 55 million. But I think it's important to note on this particular slide, Honorable Chair, that in terms of the four branches of the Public Service Commission through which the mandate of the Commission is operationalized, we have the administration which takes the biggest core or biggest chunk of the budget of the Commission, which is 125 million. And then we have the leadership and management practices, which takes 44 million. Monitoring and evaluation will take 39 million, whereas integrity and anti-corruption, it takes 54 million. And then that's why the total is 264. But perhaps just to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee to say, in terms of the next 3 years, in terms of 2019-2020, the budget of the Public Service Commission will increase to 278, and then in 2021, it will be 297 million. In terms of the expenditure trend, the Public Service Commission would like to bring the following to the honorable members in this house. The Public Service Commission budget in the previous year, in the coming year, will be 264 million for 2018-19. Out of this budget, 202 is allocated to compensation of employees, whereas 54 will go to the goods and services. The PSC is a knowledge-based organization and does not outsource its work. As a result, the bulk of the PSC budget is allocated to its compensation of employees. This has created an imbalance in the PSC budget in the sense that an average of 75% for the 17-18, and in this year it will be 76%, as I indicated, it goes to compensation of employees, and then 23% goes to goods and services. The PSC is only left with 30% of its total budget. And that 30% amounts to 1.7 million. This is the one that is dedicated to the implementation of the mandate of the Public Service Commission, which is the core mandate or core business of the Public Service Commission. In other words, what I'm raising here, Honorable Chair and Member, and Deputy Minister, is to say the mandate of the Commission is left to 1.7 million. With the remaining 1.7 million, the PSC will be unable to execute its mandate effectively. This is as a result of budget shortfall in the baseline allocations and the budget cuts that were implemented by the National Treasury. I think it is the common knowledge that we all know that because of the pressure, the National Treasury was compelled to do those cuts. Given the limited resources, the Public Commission will focus on the key output on its workflow and cut down on the research projects. And to this end, the following are the key areas that the Commission will implement with the view that we will maximize the impact of the Public Service Commission. It is the evaluation and promotion of the consumer values and principles, which is going to be the flagship of project of the Public Service Commission during the next financial year, the current financial year. Of course, the Public Service Commission will continue with its management of grievances and complaints as reported to the Public Service Commission. The Commission will also continue with its work with regard to financial misconduct as informed by the Treasury regulations. And the Commission manages the National Anti-Corruption Hotline on behalf of government, and it has been assigned this assignment through the Cabinet memo. The Commission will continue with its inspections, although this time around to be at a limited scale, mainly because inspections by nature will require a great deal of resources, particularly financial resources, if the Commission has to travel to a great deal of outskirts of the country where most of the challenges might be experienced. In respect of other remaining priorities, the PSC has revised the scope and approach to facilitate cost-cutting measures while still achieving its mandate. For example, requesting departments to host inspections for workshops at their expenses. In this regard, where we have entered into a memorandum of understanding with teams and others to also share their resources with the Public Service Commission and such institutions like the NASA and other universities really play a key role in assisting the PSC in this regard. The PSC has also advised the TPME, that's the Department for Planning, Monitoring, and Partnership, and National Treasury, that this current annual performance plan is premised on the fact that it will not be able to pay basic operations. And those key basic operations, we have listed them, Honorable Chair, and they're the following. It's the travel and subsistence costs, including attendance of engagements with Parliament and provincial legislatures by any commissioner or employee of the Public Service Commission. Inspections, workshops, advocate sessions, on-site visits to conduct grievance and complaints investigations. Of course, the issue of catering has already been mentioned several times by Treasury, saying that it should not be done, and the Commission is also complying with that. The printing of compliance reports, this includes annual reports and annual performance plan reports, or other reports produced by the Public Service Commission. Advertising for filling of vacancies and travel for the interviews will also be done at a very limited scale. Maintaining a current ICT system and also implementing interdisciplinary programs, particularly around the roundtable discussions with stakeholders to engage on the PSC report. We have the view that with the current resource that we have, we are not going to be able to do some of these operations at the level we used to do. That will affect the operations and the efficiency of the Public Service Commission. Honorable Chair, I think one of the things that you requested us to present are some of the revised legislative mandate, and then we'll have to bring it to the following to the attention of the committee. The PSC's rules on conducting investigations published in Government Gazette, which is number 4055, dated 20th January 2017. The purpose of these rules is to provide for the investigation and evaluation of the matters as concentrated in Section 196A of the Constitution of the Republic. The PLC is supposed to describe the matter that might be investigated and evaluated by the Public Service Commission. And those matters that will not be investigated and the procedures to be followed before lodging a complaint with the Public Service Commission and the information required when lodging such a complaint with the Public Service Commission. During the period under review as well, in terms of the previous financial year, the Public Service Commission's Amendment Bill of 2015 was also tabled. In this regard, the purpose of the bill is to amend the Public Service Commission's Act 1997 so as to clarify the procedure with regard to the renewal of the term of office of the commissioner, provide for a commissioner to act as the chairperson when both the chairperson and the deputy chairperson are absent or for any reason unable to act as chairperson, and provide for matters connected therewith. Honorable Chair, in terms of our 18-19 annual performance targets, which we have developed them and package them in terms of what is expected for each quarter, we, in terms of problem one, which is administration, of course we are aiming that we'll get a qualified audit report when the financial year ends. And then in terms of the payment of invoices, PSC is committed to ensure that throughout the financial year they will be paid within 30 days. There will also be a higher section, a 15 notice, which will be submitted to the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and that will be done during the fourth quarter. With regards to the risk management report, which will be produced quarterly, will be produced quarterly accordingly. A number of interim financial statements will be submitted to the National Treasury on a quarterly basis. I think we would also like to bring to the attention of the fellow committee that during the period that we are undertaking the next the current financial year in terms of our APP under the branch LMP, which is the second branch of the Public Service Commission, there will be grievances of employees on salary levels 2 to 12, which will be finalized within 30 days, within 30 working days from the date of receipt of such all relevant information. Similarly, the grievances of SMS members will also be finalized within 45 days from the date of receipt of all relevant information. Honorable Chair, as we indicated in terms of the financial constraints, in order to comply with legislative requirements, including the constitutional right for fair labor practices and just administrative action, grievance investigations require interviews with affected and interested parties so as to ensure that they are heard properly. Due to these financial constraints, the PSC will only conduct desktop audits on information provided by the department and affected parties. This approach may be very problematic, particularly the rights of parties involved in this investigation, and that such could lead to legal action which will have negative consequences on the reputation of the Public Service Commission. But I think we are compelled to follow this approach or methodology because of the challenges that I indicated earlier. We'll continue in terms of the leadership and management practices with a number of reports of grievances that will be produced. And to this end, we'll produce technical brief, which will be a 6-monthly report on departmental grievance resolution. We'll also produce a fact sheet trend on trend analysis of grievances. And the commission, the TSC will also produce a community on grievances managed by departments so as to raise the awareness of the patterns and the nature of grievances that the TSC is experiencing, which will help departments to put systems in place to respond to such a grievance. It's important to deal with this grievance, Honorable Chair, in our effort to promote labor peace in the public sector. The following research reports will also be produced by this particular branch, which is leadership and management practices. That will be the engagement on labor relations improvement based on the PSC's findings and recommendations emanating from the grievance. The Public Service Commission also conducts structured collaboration with the dispute resolution institutions, particularly to ensure that the sharing of resources and strengthening of the capacity in such institutions. There will also be evaluation of the recruitment and selection systems that are applied in the public services. And this is meant to ensure that indeed the recruitment and selection of the public service is meritocratic based and follows the higher regulations of the regulations that are in place. The Public Service Commission will also evaluate the performance management development systems, which is a key instrument in the public service to ensure that it's effective performance. And in this regard, finally, particularly in terms of this branch, there will be assessment of the extent and the nature of contract appointments in the public service, particularly to ensure the value add of such appointments and what does that mean in terms of the salary base of the public service. With the next branch, which is monitoring and evaluation, through which the PSC operationalizes its mandate, there will be evaluation reports mainly around the issues of constitutional values and principles, which the Commission is undertaking, and we are regarding this as a flagship project and a very potentially exciting initiative in the Commission indeed. Section 9 of the PSC Act 1997 provides for the Public Service Commission to conduct inspections, and through these inspections, the PSC is able to identify service delivery lapses and develop immediate solutions through engagement with community members. Key stakeholders and relevant departments have also appreciated the findings that the PSC has identified through such inspections. The PSC also assists government to gauge its progress towards the realization of the better life for all, regardless of the socio-economic and geopolitical standing in the society. And as a result of political challenges in this regard, the inspections will be conducted as the federal limited aid as indicated. The final branch through which PSC operationalizes its mandate is the integrity and anti-corruption. And in this regard, there will be a public administration investigations regarding all complaints that will be submitted to the PSC. And the PSC is of the view that 55% of all those that will be reported should be finalized during the incoming financial year that we are presenting with the NPPO. And of course, there will also be two flagship research projects that the PSC has identified. One of them is the procurement of public accommodation by public works. And I think the Honorable Chair will notice that in the previous year, the PSC complained about the delays that it experienced with regard to the procurement of these offices. And this end commission felt that this might not be the commission's problem. It might be public service wide. But the entire public service was dependent on public work to procure its accommodation. So that's why the commission is now conducting this search to establish the challenges that experience or whatever it is that prevents public work to procure office accommodation speedily. So this study is meant to assist that particular initiative. The next report will be on the appointment of CEOs in the hospital. I think we, as you have indicated, Honorable Chair, through the B4R, the challenges of experience in the health sector in the country. So to this end, the PSC is saying, first is important to establish the management of the hospital. Are the CEOs of the hospitals medically qualified or coming from the medical discipline? And if that's the case, how much of that contributes towards the management of the hospital? So the PSC comes to view that with this particular project, the issues around the health sector and the management thereof could be exposed and revealed to a point where they can contribute towards the effective management of the health sector. And of course, in terms of the investigation, we have to say we'll deal with the desktop, particularly to manage the challenges around the capacity. The PSC will continue with the fact sheet with the financial misconduct, which is a key instrument in the public service, particularly to deal with issues of financial discipline, so that we establish the constraints and issues around financial delegation in the public service. And of course, 85% of all cases reported to the Public Service Commission will be referred to the department for investigation. Those are the cases that the PSC is of view that they can be done by department without compromising the quality of investigation. But those cases that have to do with procurement and appointment, the commission will investigate them itself without referring them to the department. because they can be compromised. Perhaps just to also conclude, particularly on the branch, that the commission has also is currently managing the National Anti-Corruption Hotline internally. It is one assignment that was outsourced for many, many years, but because of the financial constraints, the commission felt that it should manage it internally. And as such, that has contributed to a saving in the commission. And I think it has been a very beneficial decision by the commission. And as it stands, we manage our National Corruption Hotline from 8 to 7. And we think that it's not 24 hours. And we have marketed that to inform public members of public that they should know that we are managing it between the times. So that if they call outside of time and the number called it to pick up through the facility of the voicemail, they should not be surprised. But we do follow up with those that have left their contact details. Of course, we'll also conduct workshops to ensure that there's professional ethics in the public service. Honorable Chair, I think I've raised this matter because they were part of the information that is contained in the information that I raised around financial misconduct. But key to this discussion is just to ensure that the Public Service Commission will continue with its effective management of the financial disclosure framework, which is key because members or senior managers in the public service use this instrument to disclose their financial interests, their directorship, so that we can be able to manage the issues around a possible conflict of interest or actual conflict of interest should they occur in the public service, which if they are not properly managed, they can be fertile ground for corruption in the public service, which I think we all committed to fight. Just in conclusion, Honorable Chair, as we spoke about, this is 17-18 achievement, and we show the graph that says from 2015, 2016, 2017, how has the PSC performed in the various financial years. So in terms of the financial year that is just ended, end of March 2018, the PSC achieved 94% of its target. And I think in terms of budget, we spent 99%, which means the our predetermined objectives were achieved 94, and in terms of the budget, we spent 99. So the two can talk to each other. But in terms of those key achievements, Honorable Chair, I would just like to highlight the following, that in terms of the report, there were reports on the particular clinical report on the grievance resolution, in terms of the performance against the standards and implementation service, divine plan, improvement plans, in terms of the performance information and the 30-day statement that were done by the Public Service Commission. The PSC also, during the periodic review, produced fact sheets on the following that completed disciplinary proceedings on financial misconduct for 2017, assessment of the implementation of financial disclosure framework, and we made two presentations to SCORE, particularly because of the nature that they've been requested by SCORE, and it is a standing arrangement that we have with them. And the PSC concluded its design of its CVP, which is Constitutional Values and Principles Institutional Evaluation Tool. And it's a very important tool because we are currently piloting it with the 12 departments, the social development sector, national treasury, and human settlements. I think we can also indicate that during the period under review, we conducted inspections, that is during for the delivery of textbooks or text materials to schools in all provinces, and also conducted inspections at selected social service centers and at police stations in the Free State. As of the 31st of March 2018, a total of 306 complaints were registered on the database of the Public Service Commission, and 69% of those were finalized. In terms of the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, as I indicated, that is now managed internally, we saved 2.9 million because of that decision. And of course, the commission also had 100% of all cases referred to the respective departments, and we hosted workshops at the national and provincial departments where we were promoting professional ethics as part and parcel of the initiative to defend that particular constitution, the constitutional principle in the constitution that high standard of professionalism in the public service. Honorable Chair, this is our presentation, but I just want to point two things that are not on the presentation that talks to the few people up, because I think it's important that we bring that to the attention of the committee. The committee that brings the few people up refers to DPSA in particular, because the DPSA should assist with the financial challenges of the Public Service Commission. And I would like to applaud our colleagues in the DPSA, whatever check, because we were possibly going to overspend by 5 million. And indeed, it gave us 5 million to transfer that, which assisted the Public Service Commission, particularly during the period analysis. And it came from this particular committee, during the sitting of the Beautiful Arts. The other point that was raised by the same commission during the Beautiful Arts was the issue of the office accommodation of the Public Service Commission. I'm proud to get you to announce that the Public Service Commission is moving into the new accommodation on the 1st of June 2018. And it was because of the intervention of the committee and the support that we got from Public Works. And we're very happy to really announce that, because it has been a community challenge that we experienced over the years. So we are very happy that the committee intervened accordingly. Only the last part, it has to do with the tracking of the audit issues that were raised with this particular committee by the AGs, and we thought we should bring to the attention of the committee the progress made so far. The progress made is in the following way. 30 of all findings that were raised at the time are completed and finalized. It's only 3 that the TSC is monitoring. My key to those require us to be in the new office accommodation. So during the tenant installation and the IT-related installation, they will be addressed to, because they had to do with the issue called IT-related. So we are hoping that when we are going to separate to a new accommodation, this aspect will be key to the service provider who will be installing our services in that regard. Perhaps let me conclude by saying, all the areas that the Commission might not complete in the particular financial year, they are carried over to the next financial year so that the Commission can monitor that until they are logically concluded. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm glad to end to the chapter of the PC. If you'd like to say, he has indicated to me that he does not say something. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Yeah, I'm impressed by the issue of the audit report. When you on expenditure, you are at 99%. It means that there is little that needs to be corrected so that you achieve a clean audit. But you are still planning to achieve a conference. I don't understand why is it like that. What is it that you think you cannot do at all to achieve a clean audit? Are you not in a position to improve on such challenges? Because these are the challenges that you really know. Then my question would be, why plan to fail? Are you telling us that you are failing to plan? That was my first fight. The other issue is with regard to the appointment of CEOs in hospitals. One would want to know what are the requirements really to be appointed as a CEO of a hospital. why do we today have somebody who do not have a medical background to be appointed as CEO of the hospital, and to even appointing someone who is very junior to the people that he or she is going to be leading? Why is it like that? And lastly, I want to know is what informs your budget increase in the next two financial years. When you have experienced the budget cut this financial year, do you have plans in place if you can experience a cut in that regard? You have just reported you may not be able to complete programs with the remaining 3% budget left in your test. So when now you are planning that you will be increasing the budget in the next 2-3 financial years, are you not maybe committing a mistake? If I don't know for how many past financial years you have been experiencing a cut, but now you just think miracles will happen, that you have a lot of budget. It's not going to affect you negatively. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Separate from the first question, it's in regards to slide 15. The section 9 of the provides for the PAC to for tax inspection, but to the financial council, the department of the inspection for tax inspection. So my question is, what is that they have plan for the financial sector? Because the purpose of the inspector being there is to enhance the delivery. And what is the status in regards to the outsourced work? Because it's true that it's only 10% of the total PEP that was supplied by National Grid tonight. Oh, that would be 2019. Now, and what is the current status? So that we know that. There are times when the hotline is closed. I just want to know, do they have the mechanism to follow up? Because the people who bring that statement would like to do this. Now, if they are not closed, that's the ability to make sure that each and every case is being handled. And I hope closure means cheapness. So, not necessarily closed because somebody is responding. In such a way that the person who puts in the problem is satisfied with the problem.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair, for the mentor. Thank you from the faculty practice running I never thought that EPS would come and complain about the money. Seemingly, I've been listening to this for morning, where these are children that have been accused of cost cutting. I've not been cost cutting of cutting the financial needs to the department. But I'm sure advocates are not going to remember this. We said, unless you make sure that whatever you put in your request is scientifically rich, for some empirical evidence. Maybe the administration will give the money. I want to refer to this one, Chairperson. You see this document, application bill of 2018-2019. It says, advocates that you don't have a road, but your money will be transferred from the public service and administration within problem six. And let my friend, let us say, this is what they're expecting from you in that problem six. They stipulate exactly what they're expecting from the Public Service Commission. That's why they give them the 264. So Public Service Commission cannot come back to us and say, you're not going to deliver. Because you have failed to put your case in National Treasury. And we've been saying this again and again, even today. You are saying you're going to spend 55 million on goods and services, but you don't itemize them. How do you arrive to 55 million? From 1 cent to 55 million, how do you arrive? And who can give you the money when you can't itemize it? So that's why I'm saying, I'm just laughing. But only thing that you're expecting out of this committee, PSC, you're going to deliver it. Whether you like it or not, with the pooping or sleeping, you have led yourself to that situation. You have led yourself to a situation if National Treasury depends on the information submitted to them. They are the stakeholders of the strategy planning of all the departments thus far until the PM takes over. But while they are in charge, they look at the information and say, ah, I want to be going to 10 people. To do this, they need 5 people. Because of the information you submit to National Treasury. So, only thing what I'm saying, it's not even a comment, I'm just saying they are going to deliver check again. We need what they said to deliver it and attain it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the presentation. Thank you for the presentation. I'm going to ask, because I don't see this on the slide, how many staff altogether in the PSC? Has anybody resigned or left in the past financial year? Are there no vacancies? What are the percentage of vacancies, employment equity, gender, etc., and people with disabilities working at the PSC, that information please. And also I would like to ask, one of your commissioners sat down with me to discuss the report about people living with disabilities, and I'd like to know how far the PSC went with that report, the time frame regarding that report, I'd like to find out. And this commissioner in particular asked me which job should be ring-fenced for people with disabilities. For example, in the past, for blind people, switchboard operator, that position was ring-fenced for blind people. So I said, no, people with disabilities can do any kind of work if they are qualified to do it. They can be lawyers, they can be commissioners, they can be anything. You don't need to ring-fence switchboard operating position for people with disabilities. So my question is, why do questions like this still come up that need to ring-fence positions? So I'd really like to know how far the PSC is with that report. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. I've raised this question before, so all about, it looks like the PhD is being bankrupt. I mean, in time expected to have a million rand that do the job that they do in this country. So I've raised the issues. Something needs to be done.
Okay, can you repeat the question, please?
Thank you, Chair. It's been stated here that the PSC will no longer be able to do inspections. And I take it with inspections of correctional facilities and health facilities, etc., etc., because you do not have money. Could you explain to me how are you going to get the information you need in order to fulfill your mandate? You also said that you have requested departments to host and pay for things like workshops, inspections, etc., etc. I would like to know what has been the response to your request. And then there's a worrying picture that emerges from your presentation as far as expenditure trends are concerned. concern. You also listed a number of things which you are doing to get around not having money. I would like to know, is that your entire strategy, or are you working at a specific strategy, and what is? Then I would like to ask the Deputy Minister, there's a lot of stories in the media today about the wage negotiations and people being locked up, negotiators being locked up, stories about the initial offer put on the table by the previous minister being taken off the table. Could the Deputy Minister please tell me what is the status of the wage negotiations at the moment? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Which implies that there are certain obligations that are going to be kept. Example is the inspection that I mentioned. So there could be other that are going to be kept in order to deal with the 76% instead of the 35%. So one would like to know which, what are those items or what are those obligations that are shelved instead of being done through the course of that process.
Allocation and cutting of budget for department, it will be reduced, it will be hard to get like a budget. So
Joshua telling us that he's keeping us with here, that is one of the other responsibilities. And he said, sit together with the PSA and the good settlers and go together. We all had to go to treasure at that time. So I'm saying, I'm raising that, that what we are here about DG is not what you're supposed to be here about. You're supposed to be happy, not happy and very frustrated about the 1.7 million that is only on your key mandate. Which is so bad, because some of the questions that you are asking, you are not supposed to respond to it, to them, because you're not supposed to action them, because you don't have money. And we can't sit here and say this, and say government, and say this for coming to the creation of it. It doesn't make sense. Even in your own mental self-esteem, it doesn't help you. I felt that I just need to amplify and build on that one, because we have missed that one. It's not political, it's administrative. So I'm sure advocates, then you know you've got a lot of work to do there in terms of making sure that the citizen minister is able to ensure that you edge upon yourself to also look for more money, because we still believe in terms of the laws and also in terms of the constitution that we still need public service commission. We still have to do it as well. Then on a positive, slight positive one.
It's just
slight. Which is our way, I'm saying to allow that when we come back, we need to also, there are two commissioners that are office that end this year, early next year, and we're going for elections. In our next engagement, as the postal committee, we must also say what we want to do about that, so that probably can bring it forward. other things to get here, which is what we're dealing with the same thing. But that includes, because some of the issues that we've raised outside your control system in terms of the budget, but what we have raised is very important to the direction. And also tell us what we're going to do.
I'm going to take the question.
Okay, that's why I'm asking to come here. I'm not going to take you to the
place. I have the when they introduced the caps
they introduce caps that apply to everyone. As a result, we have managed to comply with their staff thing. We have cut our personnel by 24%. But we have discussed with Treasury and we cannot agree on some of the things we discussed our budget. Honorable Dwether, apart from the APP just giving the highlights and the summary in terms of strict territory, Treasury have a full scale of our expenditure, costed activities that we have, which are there. It's true we have given high taxes, they know everything, even our expenditure goes through them every time and they check to deal with that. What we have agreed, because we can agree on extending our baseline, because our functions according to federal regulation require that for them to extend our baseline we have new functions, and largely our functions remain stable and based on the constitution. We have actually put ourselves under administration by Treasury. Treasury has sent in what they call the G-Tech, which is the technical unit of Treasury, which works with us. They have gone through our expenditure, they've gone through our activities and costing them. They are looking at our personnel, they are looking at our operational mesh model, they are looking at the systems we are working with. In fact, even as we closed the financial year, they were part of the system that works with us at CBSA in Hoban to get up the 5 million. So they are working with us to address the financial things as we have done. And as of now, they are in our offices. They are going to stay with us for the whole year. And they are looking at how to help the commission to go through its process. So we have a full complement, which is human resource trained, which is the General Technical Government Assistant Unit of Treasury, and they are working with us. And we're very happy with what Treasury is doing with us. And for instance, they are the one who organizes the whole cluster of TBSA. For instance, they are the one who told the TBSA to change and transfer the money. So in terms of that, we have a strategy, and we're very happy about that. All the other methods, we deal with them in writing. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Happy Service Commission.
And we then honor the members NSG. High level, we do training needs analysis and research in order to inform the curriculum design. Training needs analysis, we engage directly with departments and we have a methodology for establishing some of the gaps that exist in terms of skills and competencies. The research is based on reports from the Public Service Commission, the Auditor General, and work in the DPSA as well, or DPOE, which indicates the kinds of gaps that we have within the training, education, and learning environment. We design curriculums in-house, and this is quality assured, and we will give a breakdown of the number of accredited programs later in this presentation. We then try and market and sell the programs. We establish relationships with departments. We sign MOAs, MOUs, which is part of the PRRR recommendations as well. So we have been pursuing that particular recommendation. And then we build a cadre of trainers. We modified it over the last few years, and we have expanded our database to include serving and retired public servants. We deliver the training, and then obviously we certify those that have gone through the training program and met all the requirements. And we also evaluate and monitor what goes on in the training. And we do application of learning studies. I have been saying to the committee, based on the questions received, which helps us to understand the change in behavior of people that have gone through the courses. That is an outcome level rather than an impact level. Impact is a bit more complex, but we are trying to put together an impact analysis.
So in terms of 18-19, we engaged in a planning workshop at the end of last year. We looked at building, positioning the NSG brand, strengthening the core business of the NSG, and making the NSG an employer of choice. We've also been cognizant of the resolutions of the national conference and the foot of the ruling party, which talk about the role the NSG must play in capacity employees in all spheres of government. That's in line with the NDP as well. And providing support for talent management across the spheres of government and providing guidance on appointment, succession planning, and career development. There are also resolutions which impact on the work of the NSG, particularly the centrality of integrated macro policy planning and coordinated implementation. This would require the building of capacity across the state in order to implement this, and we would need to work with the DPME in order to identify the relevant programs and to implement those. And then accredited training in public employment programs. We've already developed the program and we've tested it, which would be applicable for those involved, particularly in government work relating to the progressive realization of socioeconomic rights. And that would include, obviously, land reform program, as well as working social welfare, social development, along with the major social services sectors, health and education. So we've actually developed and piloted a course at the beginning of this year based on that particular resolution. So during this financial year, we have a number of priorities. The learning pathways for the entrance into the entering or the lower levels of the public service. Certainly that's the major change with the transition from Palama, which was more based on building management capacity, to the NSG, which now must cater for all the levels in the public service. So we are prioritizing learning pathways for people at the entry level and the lower salary levels of the public service. Identifying short programs for developing accredited programs. This would also target the upper echelon because from chief director and above, we have very low uptake of NSG programs. So we are trying to build a partnership with Stanford University to focus on foresighting and innovation. They have a program. It has been run by the Technology Innovation Agency for a number of years, and we have begun to run this program. We're just trying to work through the complexity of institutional arrangements to, that's an example of what we're doing in that area there. A program on patriotism and reorientation, focusing on renewal and unity in our country. We do have the material together and those programs are ready for rollout as a blended program, face-to-face, along with online studies. Then, undertaking a feasibility study towards a national assessment center. Do you need a field database, NSG or any other entity is going to support the whole of talent management with reference to those resolutions, then it would be important for us to have a database of skills in the public service. And there was such a system which was created previously within the GPSA. It was tested and the rollout began, but then it was halted. I'm not sure why I had left the GPSA at that time. And then also building capacity in the public service to understand the theory and ideology of a capable developmental state. Chapter 13 of the NDP speaks to this, and we obviously need to make sure that there is an understanding across the entire public service of this particular aspect and vision of the NDP of building a capable developmental state. We do also, we have escalated our activity at local government level. We have reported to the committee on the role we played in supporting the induction of new councillors. We have now also signed an MOU with the local government CETA to collaborate on training in local government. So we're well placed now in the local government sphere. We also have an MOU with SALGA. Now moving on to program one, where the strategic outcome-oriented goal is to make the NSG a well-resourced, high-performing learning center of excellence. And program one comprises the Office of the Principal, incorporating the Office of the CFO, internal audit, and international special projects and communications. as well as corporate management. So the strategic objective here within this broader is to improve financial sustainability, organizational performance, strategy and performance. Obviously, the indicators would be the clean audit, the number of days taken to collect current outstanding debts, the number of days taken to pay suppliers, and projected revenue generation by the TTA. That's the trading account. And we have got specific targets which are for 2018-19, which you will hold us to account for. And then the implementation of efficient and effective infrastructure and human resource management to support improved performance, reducing the vacancy rate, we talk specifically to that in the next slide, the number of days to resolve disciplinary cases and the disaster recovery plans, and then establishing strategic multi and bilateral partnerships to enable the NSG to deliver programs aimed at capacity recovery to the public service. And we do have an extensive international exchange program and capacity building partnerships ranging from the Academy of Chinese Academy of Governance in Beijing to the French École Nationale de l'Administration, as well as the African Management Development Institute efforts on the continent, which has a partnership as we explained with the African Union. Now, in terms of the human resource management issues that we want to talk to, we want to here indicate that the budget reductions by the National Treasury on both the vote and trade accounts means that the NSG will commence the financial year with the number of SMS and non-SMS posts not being filled. We have 228 posts on the approved establishment for programs 1 and 2, with 205 posts filled and 23 vacant. And that represents a vacancy rate of 10% by the end of March 2018. This gives some kind of a breakdown in terms of gender and disability. And it shows that in terms of the basic targets, we've well exceeded them. At the SMS as well as the non-SMS level, there are more women in the NSG than men. And we have 3.4% in terms of disabled staff on the establishment as well. In terms of corporate governance, all the basics are in place. We have the necessary committees, audit risk, and departmental management. We are subjected, like all departments, to a management performance assessment tool. We monitor it. We improve our performance within that particular assessment. Hopefully, it improves the performance of the organization as a whole. And there is a big focus on strategic risks, particularly given our dependence on generating revenue through selling our programs within the public environment. So we have done a lot of work which is going towards developing an operational risk register. We have sought to identify other resources. One of the big problems internationally, which has been recognized with cost recovery models for training entities within government, is that they just generate revenue for running costs, not for investment in capital, etc. So we have had to seek partnerships. We sought with the European Union, and we have a four-year funding partnership of about 10 million euros to support and strengthen the NSG. And we do get some numbers of the money that comes to us, which we can talk about in the next slide. It also, this program has enabled us to strengthen relationships on the continent, and we have been able to strengthen the African Management Development Institute network, which is an important network and has been in place for almost 10 years now. And it has an MOU with the African Union Commission, and it also sits on the Specialized Technical Committee number 8, which also deals with issues relating to public service administration. And the NSG is the Secretariat of the African Management Development Institute Network, and the principal is the current Secretary General of that network. We also have engaged in a partnership now with NEPAD to strengthen South African engagement in the Open Government Partnership. And we also are collaborating with NEPAD in building a program on African governance, which will be rolled out by through the AMDEN network, most likely. So these deal with the numbers on the budget. This is the administration, the vote account. This is where the vote funds go. And we know that the revised baseline is about 169 million for 2018-19. The donor funding, we've got the numbers there. Those are numbers in rand. These are the monies that come in. Now, there is an African scholar known as Zambisa Moyo, who has written a lot of work on aid. And the reality of the situation is that we don't see most of the money that comes from the EU. A lot of the procurement is conducted by the EU. A lot of the funds are managed by the EU. And obviously, in terms of some of the important programs which would assist us to strengthen our back office and put in place the necessary training management system, is funded through funds that the EU manages directly. The procurement is done abroad as well, and that is a risk. That is a strategic risk for this program, because we are unable to control the procurement, and the specifications for that, the tenders that are being issued, certainly favor overseas suppliers and not local South African suppliers. In any event, that's basically the breakdown of the budget as it currently stands for the period from 1516 through to 2021. Moving on to program 2, where the strategic outcome-orientated goals are to improve learning and development opportunities influenced by impactful research, strategic diagnosis, and M&E, learning and development tools, quality-driven curriculum, programs and services responding to public service needs, and an integrated and collaborative network of training and development institutions and practitioners providing public service with access to quality learning and development opportunities. So now, in this slide here, we look at the NSG course matrix at a very high level, 128 accredited and non-accredited courses and programs, and we have a total number of accredited courses and programs of 97. Those that are assured by the state bodies as well as HEIs, which is in a way also state bodies, and then we have 31 which are non-accredited. Of course, this is a big discussion. We have had this discussion at times in the portfolio committee sittings. That is, what is the proportion of accredited versus non-accredited programs? And in any event, this is the current situation in terms of our programs. Now, these are the targets for the medium term. And at this point, I would possibly like to just reflect very briefly on some of the issues which pertain to the fourth quarter, as some of my colleagues have done. we weren't sure about incorporating the slides, but we thought that would be confused, or generate confusion. But just to indicate that these are the targets. So the targets now are sitting around 50,000 people trained per year. And obviously the formulation of the target is influenced by the budgetary necessities in terms of the revenue we must generate in order to remain an ongoing concern. And as the committee will remember, in the previous financial year, that is 16-17, for the first time we exceeded the target very, very substantially. If you remember that, we actually trained 65,000 people. And we did receive some criticism. We went right up to the AG level because we hadn't planned to do that. But obviously we went all out for the numbers because there was a big challenge in the previous years that we simply were giving targets and never meeting them. So last year we were very good on the targets in terms of we set a target of 48,000 and we trained 49,000. So it was just a slight overshoot on the target. But we have, I think, moved to a situation where we understand what is required in order to meet the training targets, which I think the committee would obviously be happy about. I'm certainly very happy about. The issue of quality now can receive the attention which the committee has been looking at. We will obviously report, and we have prepared materials which we will submit along with the answers to the questions on the fourth quarter, which talks about the achievement of targets in both Program 1 and Program 2. Room for improvement, certainly, notwithstanding the major targets that we have achieved. And also on the BRRR, just to mention at this point that the key issues for NSG was the cost recovery model. And we did come several times to the committee. We explained the work we had done with the Treasury and departments in terms of us identifying a certain slice which could be taken from human resource development budget across the board. We refined the model considerably, so we were not proposing that a single number, say 10% or 5%, should be cut. Based on the engagements with departments, we came up with between 3 and 7% in order to begin to test the model. Then we would give a list of compulsory programs, and those we would deliver at no cost to the departments because we would have already taken from their budgets and put it into the NSG. We did run it through all the processes of officials, but it really needs to go to Cabinet. Cabinet needs to consider it. And then that will clear the pathway for it to go into the Minister's Committee on the Budget for discussion moving forward. As I've indicated, the BRRR speaks to the importance of us signing MOUs with government departments to ensure compliance with the new prepayment system. We have, and we can give the details, extensive MOUs with departments. It has been very good in terms of assisting us with the prepayment process. On the utilization of serving and retired public servants, we did announce to the committee that we began a Ruta Namba Afrika campaign. We received 667 applications from individuals and 143 from organizations. The gap now is the work that the DPSA needs to support us on. And that is how do staff get released in order to actually do the training on behalf of the NSG and government. And then to categorize information in terms of women, youth, and people with disability. We started doing that, and we can certainly give some numbers in relation to this of the individuals trained of those 49,000. So this gives the numbers on the training account, and it also indicates that we did have some shortfall in terms of the revenue. For the 17-18 year, which we'll obviously report on extensively in the annual report, but we also have the revised budget estimates here for the after 2 years, 18-19. This next slide does talk about the training facilitation through Ruta Namba Afrika. It expands a bit on the aims, and it gives the numbers which I've just mentioned. And the importance, though, is the policy input from the DPSA, how to release the public servants to do the training. So this goes through the strategic objectives, the implementation of effective research to inform training and development needs, the number of research projects, the number of training needs analysis, the number of research colloquia. We really need to find a way of boosting the number of training needs analysis because it is a potential source of revenue. Departments want us to help them identify appropriate training programs, and we work with them, then we should actually charge them for that work. It also talks about the research articles. It also talks about the issue of a national competency assessment center to support the competency testing process as described by the EPSA for entrance and promotion within the senior management service. We also need to look at the resurrection of the HR Connect, which is the online skills database, and we will have to obviously work with EPSA because originally the system was created within the EPSA. The implementation of effective monitoring of the quality of training, and it is also about the number of evaluations and the application of learning studies where we follow through with participants in the program. Again, the cooperation of departments, changing the culture around training, not only in terms of the uptake, but the follow-through required for this to happen properly. And then the development of accredited and non-accredited curriculum responding to public service training and development needs. The development and offering of technology-mediated learning. We have already put in place a curriculum for the pre-entry requirements for the SME that kick in from 2020 onwards. It includes examinations and has been designed as a blended program. And that means that we need to seek partnerships with the public sector to install the infrastructure which would allow for this to happen. And that could be infrastructure which could be utilized across government in order to promote online training and give people, whether they in remote rural areas or in urban or peri-urban areas, access to technology-mediated learning and development. And then to provide training and development opportunities for compulsory and demand-led training to current and potential public servants. In conclusion, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, during the State of the Nation address, the President spoke about the challenges that our people face when they interact with the state, and often get no service or poor service. The President called on all public servants to adhere to the principles of budgeting and to provide services knowing that people need to serve them. The President called for a new discipline to do things correctly, to do them completely, and to do them timely. This is the culture which the NSG has to instill in as much as it is a key player in the, across the public sector. We have developed a lead facilitated development course to train community development workers to strengthen the capacity for people-centered development and to support the implementation of programs aimed at the progressive realization of socio-economic rights and government employment programs. And then, just to say in conclusion, that in appreciation of economic conditions and public finance constraints, the NSG will strive to achieve more.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the presentation. Well, I'll have a chance to check on the
response that you're getting from local government regarding the training programs that you provide. Maybe you can also clarify me on the type of programs. You guys have the public participation and the public speaking, for example. And if other respondents for
thank you very much, Chair, and thanks, Prof, for the presentation. One question. You are in partnership with the European Commission and are planning, if I'm not mistaken, to have such partnerships with Nepal. Are you also planning to have such partnerships with the BRICS countries? What are the benefits as well as the financial implications with regard to partnering with many countries for energy? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Two questions I'd like to ask. You referred in your presentation to the fact that you want to be a high-performing learning center of excellence. I would like to know who or what do you benchmark yourself against? And then I'd like to know if there's any impediment to your school throwing open its doors to people who are seriously interested in government, but without a government job. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Just one issue, Prof. When we look at the conclusion there, the second bullet point, and I agree with your commitment there. Question is there something already being done? And if so, what are you doing and how are you going to do it, especially if we take into account the discussion we had earlier on about home affairs. And if you recall recently, the SEPS officer who was sitting there fooling around with the phone was explaining that.
Home affairs.
Yeah, home affairs.
She's covered.
Probably, I would further cover you or Honorable Gamio by saying that in this portfolio committee, we have been complaining that departments are not responding positively or sensitively so towards people who are utilizing sign language as a communication mode. Have you ever received any request from the department having an interest in training in that space? And have you thought of training us as the portfolio committee members to we can make it a joke, like I was looking at another one that was a doing. And I'm not too sure what it meant, but it means good. Okay, Honorable W smiled at me, but I thought you were going to tell me what does it mean. But the point I'm driving at, if we are not sensitive in that space, how are we going to be sensitive in terms of also even having an appetite for the people who are interested in? And I'm sure I'm not saying because of Honorable Delma, because there are different categories of people with disabilities that also we should also try and ask this and be seen as government having an interest. Because, you know, some of the government events, it depends who will be the main guest speaker in that event. But if it just goes to the GM, there will be no sign language to play. But that function or that target group will be watched by people at home who can't hear. And the value adds on that, there's no value adds. Probably there should be, I'm suggesting that professor that you look at. Just the basic ones probably for us, it might help. But you recall that, also I'm picking up what Honorable Dobela in terms of public speaking. I just basically what for the incoming administration as well, because not only Councillor Matlai was so well on high in terms of public speaking, all of us as public representatives, you know, that's not a prerequisite, but the basic one was probably if we can include that. Other than that, from my side, I'm fine. I'm looking forward when, before the end of the term, the new business model that is still in the pipeline, at least it will see the light of the day instead of coming before Parliament. I know it's difficult, but I'm sure with Dr. BM, that's one of the things that I talk to the heart of the patient and feeling of public service. Earlier on, we were talking about the digital revolution, so to speak. One of the other things I feel of our public service, more than anything else, we also have, so that also when we then revise the public service structure as it's organized as it's well for the government, then also we speak to that and we put that from our minds as well.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think there isn't really much to say because Professor Devine has actually covered a lot in terms of what needs to be done for the energy. But also I must say that the energy must be a catalyst in job creation for youth as a direct response to the Kenya Lovely paper. What we will be doing, hopefully, moving forward, is not just giving, but to ensure that whoever gets skills manages to actually, where possible, get placed in jobs. Same will go with disabled people. If you have to train somebody for sign language, it doesn't make sense to train them when they find themselves again in the street after being trained. So initially, people need to be prepared for them to be in the position to get into the position to be only taking into consideration that we have a high vacancy rate in the background of the economic downturn also, because, you know, we've got to be balanced. Sometimes we might actually wish to have a vacant position for the pipeline. The big question we need to ask ourselves is affordability of those positions, but if they have been approved by Treasury and the money is there, we need to actually connect what we are doing with the vacant positions that we have with the government. There was a question about what do we do when someone is interested in working for government or the government job?
Before you respond, if you can add to your response, now I can just go back my notes in terms of Batubili. From where I'm seated, Batubili seems like now it's more of an event-orientated activity than being measured against the public servants. In delivering the savings. Because if you are giving an information, it goes a long way. What information are you giving and how it's being given to you? I'm saying in terms of customer service, if I may use that word. So in terms of customer service, because what I have observed is like now we're maybe it's like a yearly event than one of the work ethics foundations that we've made, but also in terms of your training that you have embarked, we wanted you in last year to say, can you develop a system or a tool that will also assist us when our public servants go through your tool, responding to the lower level of service delivery in terms of graphic, if you mind, outcome objectives, and also in terms of just a whole public service response energy. Looking for a better way from my side. To say, have you, how far are you in terms of developing that monitoring system tool that will say, well, yes, there is value for money? I know that you say that on an interval basis, you do have some assessment way of doing that, but in terms of the performance of that space in the department or unit, which was low, because of the attending your classes or your training, then there has been an improvement in this years or so. I know it's detailed, but it needs a lot of thinking because you can't say they are not coming to for training or to attend your courses, or they do come, because it's not only budget and work body in terms of numbers attending, but it's value add in terms of their output in their department. How far are you in that person that you need to look at?
Okay, we have a proposal which we to discuss the top of that. Actually, the top of that has come up to test precisely that. We would need to work, like you say, over a couple of years. And we would need the participation from top of that itself to be able to come up with the answers that would help us to look at the impact of training. So we are poised to embark on this process with top of that if they agree to it. If I may say, Honourable Chairperson, that I think if you're serious about can we train this committee on sign language, we can actually look into the possibilities of doing that. But we also, the previous minister asked us to look at a program which would sort of target people within the legislatures, not only the National Assembly, the NCOP, but across the provinces as well. Offer a takeaway in terms of the qualification. We have spoken with UJ, and we are formulating something now. I think these things maybe can be processed outside this meeting. But just to give you an indication, we do have an appetite to work with the legislatures as well. So on the local government question that was posed by the Honourable Ntombela, just to indicate that the Lead Facilitated Development Programme that we're talking about is really about public participation, how to make public participation happen in programmes that are delivering on socioeconomic rights, but it's obviously different focus in that. So that program we tested, and we really are hoping that we will be able to roll this out in a big way over the next year. We have a lot of programs for local government, and we will submit written answers to the question. So we'll list all the programs in supply chain management, financial management, HR management, which are specifically customized for local government. And we do have MOUs with some metros, including Buffalo City and Cape Town. On the legal expenses, there is a staff member who set up a website which contains libelous information, and ultimately we fired him, but in order to set up a court interdict to stop him from publishing this information on the internet, we did incur expenses. We also had outstanding issues which were presented by the unions when I started, pertaining to things that happened in 2011, where we had certain people in the institution operate doing the same jobs on different salary levels. And I did get city accounts, and we did finally resolve that problem, and we were able to bring parity with people who were then put on all the same level without anyone losing out, without anyone being worse off. That took some of the legal work, I must say. On the EU and MEPAD, and then the question about BRICS, we do have the partnership with the Chinese Academy of Governance, and they did host last year, which China before the summit itself, because there are activities which precede every BRICS summit, a government summit for BRICS countries. And we are currently on the High Performing Learning Center of Excellence, we do benchmark ourselves against some of the international partnerships we have and institutions which will perform similar functions to us, as well as institutions across the continent. And there are some very strong institutions on the continent as well that we do need to benchmark against. We have the Breaking Barriers to Entry, which is specifically targeted at unemployed graduates who want to come into the public service. But we are, as I've indicated, we developed a program for the, to meet the Minister's determination on the pre-entry requirements for the senior management service. And really, this thing is supposed to be given access across the country, far and wide, including to people outside the public service. That's why we've designed it as a technology-mediated blended program. But it does require corporate social investment from the private sector to make it happen, because if we try and run these things off government servers, the security issues become very complex. So we do need to have 9 servers to do this. And it could be part of the public participation roll-up as well. On the new discipline, we do have the reorientation course, which installs that new discipline. And we are working on customizing it as well to have a patriotism course as well, which would then be offered inside and outside the public sector as well. So I think, hopefully I've finished an overview of the answers to the questions, and you will fill in the gaps and provide the written report. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Chairperson, Honourable Members.
I'm not going to dwell on the mandate and the introductory part of the CPSI. The members have all seen this in the past. So I'm just going to skip quickly to the provisional four-quarter achievements. I must apologize, in your pack there's one or two small mistakes. There are 14 targets, not 15, of which two were not achieved, and the three outstanding targets from the previous quarters were also achieved then in the last period. Just to mention the targets that were not achieved, we are working on quite a major project around pharmacy automation, and all the funding was not put in place before the end of the quarter. Part of this you may have seen in the media that there was a so-called pharmacy dispensing unit launched at Alexandra Plaza. Now, this is a wonderful thing of citizens accessing their medication at the mall as they do shopping. Unfortunately, the funding that was going to be earmarked for Pierre Botswana was used for that. So the citizens are still achieving new services, but we will work with our partners to finalize this project in the financial year. I'll show you a picture in the next slide as well. Two of our application projects, teleradiology and the provincial revenue enhancement project, were also not complete due to human resource constraints and approvals that were granted late in the process. As you know, we work very closely with departments, and sometimes the approvals take some time to get their buy-in and support. On the positive side, we've reported previously to this committee about our project in schools. We have concluded that project now and an extensive period of monitoring, and we're glad to report that there was zero theft of ICT equipment at the schools that we implemented the solution, that the lead response time remained consistent around 7 minutes, and you'll recall that it was over an hour, normal response times. And we are also seeing very positive signs around the personal alarms that we have rolled out in terms of the reduction of gender-based violence. And we're also very happy to mention to the portfolio committee that Mimeza was actually awarded South Africa's SMME of the Year in 2017. I think we can all take credit for supporting this initiative from when it started. We have capacitated around 715 officials through both our multimedia center and our sector-specific workshops. And we've spoken about hospital CEOs. You all remember in the past we had quite a focus on hospital CEOs in terms of making them more innovative. Our hospital-based innovation hub at the back of Goa Hospital has started showing positive results. I apologize again for the typo in your notes. We have seen, for example, that theater utilization has increased from 29%. To more than 51%. And this is maybe a statistic that is a bit shocking when we came across it, that in general in public hospitals, theater utilization is around 30%. So we know the backlogs in healthcare and so on, and it's for various reasons. So we're working with hospitals to start improving that statistic, and our initial work has led to more about 50% utilization. Lastly, our expenditure was lower than anticipated. We discussed this in the previous portfolio committee, and unfortunately, this was one of the unintended consequences of some of the instability in terms of leadership over the last quarter. However, our 30-day payment remained low at 5.363 days on average for payment. So we're quite happy with that. In terms of recruitment, we have not made many appointments. Actually, we haven't made appointments in the year, so it's still very much similar. Our people with disabilities at 5.4%. We do have two vacancies, but both are filled temporary by contract positions to sustain work. We have two interns and 65 8% female representation, which is also at management level. Below you'll see some pictures of our work with Right to Care and other partners, which detracted from our work at Rezani Baragwanath, but it's wonderful to see people getting their chronic medication through an ATM-like machine. In terms of the overview of programs, I'm not going to dwell too long on this. We have the two programs still. Program 2, the delivery side, with three work streams: research and development, solution support and incubation, and the enabling environment. Members are very familiar with this. I'm also not going to stay too long on our broader strategic outcome-oriented goal in terms of entrenching both the culture and practice of innovation. And we know how difficult cultural change is, so knowledge sharing and interaction with public servants remains, and that's one of the major cost drivers as well. Program 1 is the same as with all government departments. We want to achieve effective corporate governance. Program 2, we are looking at improving the efficiency and effectiveness of the public sector service delivery through innovation. Going to specific annual targets, Program 1, the basic target remains to achieve an unqualified audit outcome, and then Program 2 I'm going to go into a little bit more detail now. The Program 1, in terms of being able to achieve that unqualified audit, we will make sure that, as in the past, that all our quarterly reporting and statutory requirements are delivered on, that the spending remains above 97%, and that our internal and external audit recommendations are fully implemented. In terms of Program 2, we have streamlined our targets slightly compared to our previous APP and made the necessary revisions across. We have seen, for example, that by investigating a challenge and then separating that from the development process, we almost do double reporting to the portfolio committee. So we have streamlined our reporting into just reporting on the whole process, and that our outcome that we would like to see there is that for every year that we have that we develop at least two new innovative solutions. We also come at that stage where we, in anticipation for the new strategic planning period and looking at the NDP, that we have to update our strategy as well as our funding model, and this we will also do. We've already started with the background research around the funding model as well as the strategy. Just to give you a little bit more insight in terms of the two projects that we are currently working with and that we will deliver on, you will recall that we have investigated maternal referral. We have now worked very closely with all the role players, and we have concluded the scoping of this, and in quarter one we will start with the development. Members will also know that South Africa, in terms of both our NDP and the SDGs, our rate of maternal death is still unacceptable. We have done a lot to bring it down from about 200 per 100,000 citizens to around 138, 140. But that's still significantly higher than the global average of around 40 and developed countries around 7. So this project really focused on getting the right care at the right time to the according to specific health conditions. And we are very excited about this. We're working very closely with the health sector. Our other project, we've spoken about Home Affairs today. Home Affairs at the moment only are able to track about 50% of Home Affairs offices, monitor performance at 50% of the offices. So what we are doing with Home Affairs, and we will start with the development of a real-time monitoring system where we also pull from the systems and from what they are doing into a dashboard type of solution so that they can monitor performance in real-time at Home Affairs offices. The we will continue with the replication projects, and every year we identify two projects coming from our rewards program that we then support in terms of facilitating the replication thereof. And we will continue with our knowledge sharing and our awards program as well, in terms of unearthing and demonstrating innovation. We're very excited about something that we started last year, which we call public sector trailblazers. We have picked up a trend of departments starting to appoint more developers in-house. And we have awarded, for example, our Innovator of the Year last year, has developed a system that would have cost the department, the Mpumalanga Department of Health, more than 60 million rand. They developed it for free in-house. So I'm working now with these trailblazers to bring them together in a forum so that they can share their solutions and then achieve these savings across. So we are every year going to award the best trailblazer, but the emphasis is, and we've already started to coordinate them, is for them to share and implement these projects in the respective departments. We will continue with also engaging with our partners nationally and internationally, and to share our work through the journal, both online and print copies. Just in addition, sometimes there are initiatives that are coming up ad hoc, either through our engagements with the Commission, with the Portfolio Committee, and with our partners. There's just a list of issues that we are also going to address during the course of the year. I just wanted to mention, in terms of the funding model, we would like to give the opportunity for departments in working with Treasury so that we can actually fund the testing and piloting of new innovations within departments, which is at the moment hampering a lot of innovation. And we will also continue with the work of foresight in terms of long-term planning and supporting long-term planning both nationally and in the region. Maybe just for members to note that the UNDP has just released a new manual on foresighting. I think it's the first time ever that a multinational organization like that, they use four examples of current projects. All four are from Africa. Cape Verde, Rwanda, Mauritius, and Lesotho, and it also has reference to South Africa. I think there's something happening globally where Africa is taking the lead, and we're very happy to be associated because we are part and parcel of those four examples and how it came to be that they became part of the UNDP examples, and we have supported that initiative as well. In terms of the allocation, 36 million for this year, up to 40 million in the outer years, of which compensation of employees slightly higher than goods and services. Again, we also acknowledge intensive organization. Key spending items in terms of, apologies but that's not in your notes, but key spending items in terms of program one is around accommodation and auditing related costs. Program two, our knowledge platforms, getting people together to learn from each other, for us to reach out across the country because our offices is only one in Gauteng, and then for projects, both development and replication projects. Lastly, Chair, in terms of the BRRR and the tracking tool, we were asked to talk about some of the milestones in our projects, and we just wanted to make a note to the committee that our projects are normally not milestone-based, but so-called stage-gate approach, because at any one stage, because we're developing projects, we have to pull the plug. So in this case, I think Honorable Kabela spoke earlier about planning to fail. With innovation, one is actually planning to fail in some cases. I'm saying it very circumspect, but that is the innovation community. We have to acknowledge that we may fail in the process and then start from scratch, and that makes it very difficult. I'll show you a quick schematic just after this. We are also asked to be part of a forum, and I think this is a matter, Madam Chair, that we must also discuss further, because there are a number of ICT forums already existing in government. And the question is, why is it they're not working? Why is it not properly working? CETA has tried now with GovTech to have an additional advisory board so that we can directly link ICT innovation with service delivery, and we are with DPSA part of that initiative as well. And as you know, DPSA is leading the GITO Council in this regard. And lastly, in terms of the handover that we've instructed, we've already engaged with the minister and the DM, and we have already started with the first process towards the first handover, because the minister is also very keen in this regard. Lastly, just to give you a sense, if we look at this project around maternal referral, we started at the
That was actually the last slide that I just quickly wanted to share for members And this is just a typical way that most of the project and multi-year projects are then dealt with in close collaboration with our other partners in the National System of Innovation. For example, we started with the challenges of Q's, which was highlighted by this very committee, as well as the minister at the time. We looked at possible solutions. We identified a number of possible solutions, which goes to the orange blocks at the top. For example, pharmacy automation that we spoke earlier, and that we then started a replication project around this. We also used our knowledge platforms to share these best practices so that other hospitals, in this case, or other entities can use. Interesting things, for example, we learned from other sectors like RAV on the road has dealt with a number of the issues that are similar in many queues, and then we share those solutions with departments as well. But we also identified gaps, and the maternal, the referral system in hospitals or between clinics and hospitals and down the referral remains a major pressure point in this country. And we then engaged with our innovation community. So we posted this as a challenge. We identified 9 very strong potential solutions. And we then, in partnership with the health sector, were asked to refocus on maternal health, which is very much in line with both our NDP and also the global SDGs and Agenda 2063. At any one of these stages, we may find, for example, that we can't find proper solutions. And then we have to adapt a decision gate, have to stop the project. And then, but in this case, we did find the solutions. We then continued with a scoping exercise where we worked with Baragwana Hospital and Orange Farm Clinics. And the scoping exercise revealed other issues from the designated parties, from the nurses, from citizens, from doctors, from specialists, from our emergency medical services that we also had to think of. So again, we went into a refinement and a redesign of potential solutions. So at any one of these stages, we then have to go through these iterative processes. And lastly, in this year, we will, as promised, start with the piloting. At the end of the piloting, we have to take a decision with the role players, with the Department of Health, and the hospitals on the efficacy of the solution. And we have to do a cost-benefit analysis. Only then we can say the project was successful or not. If it is successful, we take it to the replication phase. If not successful, we must look at this potential for refinement. If there is, then we further test it and then replicate it. But we have to be open for the option that we may actually fail. This is a very complex and a very difficult solution to try and solve, but we are quite optimistic about it. This is just to deal with the issues of milestones versus stage gates in a development project that we are a difficult development, and replication would follow the same kind of solutions as well. Honourable members, I think that concludes then the presentation. I just wanted to mention also on your question that indeed the minister did follow all due processes in terms of the appointment of all the acting, in terms of the delegation of duties and so on. And Mr. Marshall will be able to furnish you with the necessary letters and signatures as well in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. That is administrative. From ours, that we just want to get a sense of comfort. We don't want to run the department. But if we have some performance of the department, then they come to us. Then we can do the issue. Other than that, Honourable Member, over to us.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Chair, I'm interested in one issue here. But I want to request that maybe on presented basis, the presenter clarify the zero step, because when you say at 23 schools, one is not able to upload you because the one does not know to how many schools you have been involved with. So unless if we are able to know to how many are the schools, then we will be able to respond. But it may say maybe on presenting things. The good thing to have a 0% set budget at how many schools then.
I hope this department will hire a teacher because of the significance of their contribution towards the assistance that we use. I just want to check the regularity of the identification of the project to innovate. Is it a regularized program? How do they get to know of the deficiency of a particular system and then arrange the information?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I would like to come back to Home Affairs. And I would like to know, the CPSI, what do you do for Home Affairs? Because in 2014-2015, I stood in the queue at Home Affairs because I wanted to check, but at the same time I had to apply for my children's passports and underage birth certificates. And I was very impressed because it's a very quick biometric photos, SMSs, the process, it was done, getting it ready, I was very impressed. And a few years later, people are complaining once again. So I would just like to understand, you know, what was the fault, why did they decline on that? My own sister applied for her child for an unabridged birth certificate last year, January 2017, and has not received it since. So, you know, it used to be good in 2014, and then just last year it started failing again, and we're struggling to get all of these documents again. So what does the CPSI do to assist Home Affairs, you know, to get that working? Then, the pocket guide. Speaking of the pocket guide, revisiting or revising, have we at the MP already seen an example of the pocket guide? I would like to see what it looks like. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable staff.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to add to what Honourable John Bella said about the innovators. And what I would like to know is whether you are a trailblazer and you have saved the government millions and millions of rand. What do you get? Is there any monetary award, or do you only get a piece of paper to say that you're great and innovative? Thank you, Chair.
From my side, on the 27th of this month, precisely on the response in terms of the Morgan office thing that you told us that some of the projects have been frozen on the 27th of February. Have you managed to give some to those projects? Because you have painted a very glossy, good picture that you are anticipating on the fourth quarter today. How are you going to do that? Two also, have you, which I'll request if you haven't done, like moving forward for the budget of 18-19, that cash fund that we were advised that is under the CEO's own office. because it was not clear what it is for people, how does it align itself with the business plan of the organization that is working. Because it's of no use to tell us that we are comfortable for the fourth quarter, whereas we know very well that we will get a very negative end result at the end, in terms of meeting the pre-designed objectives in a big way. Noting that we are fully aware that your projects are also overlapped, the multi-year activities, and some of them they rely on the department buying things and locally.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to the 23 schools, we tested this solution because remember this is from households to see if it's also working to protect our investment in ICT. We tested it in 23 schools, and in those 23 schools we had zero effect. So we're quite enthusiastic about the results, so it's 100% performance in that regard. I'm saying that very cautiously, because we know our criminals are more creative than sometimes than ourselves in terms of finding ways around things. In terms of the regularity of projects, we have actually then refined the specific target to say that we have to every year identify and deal with two new challenges. We get many more in this regard. We look ourselves at key projects or key challenges being faced currently, being identified by the diagnostic reports of the NDP. To use one example, medical legal cases in health, which is now a bigger than 40 billion problem. It's something that we've started looking at and investigating. So we do two projects due to capacity constraints, but we get many more projects that we are requested to assist with, and we must unfortunately say to people or to the departments we can't help. In terms of home affairs, a bit behind the cheek, but it's a serious problem. We were involved with home affairs. The SMSs that we get came from CPSI. Thereafter, DPSA was involved, and I think some of the people here in the room have been part of that intervention. And I think when we stopped, as this portfolio, services also went down, but I think that's a little bit tongue in the cheek. But in terms of what we are doing, is what we are trying to do is to give the senior management and the executive of Home Affairs, and technically all our political principals, real-time eyes onto what is happening at Home Affairs and how they are performing. Because at the moment, we do not know what is happening in 50% of the offices. So that is what we are doing with them. So what we envisage, and this is very ambitious, is that the Director General or the relevant managers at Home Affairs at 11 o'clock in the morning can see which live site capture or live capture sites are offline, which are online. This is fairly simple to do, but it is also very complicated in terms of fitting that onto the existing systems, so that we know where service delivery is happening, we know where service delivery is not happening, so that there are targeted interventions planned. So we want to give them eyes and sight at these offices. In terms of the pocket guide, we have an electronic version on our website. The reason why you will immediately see why it needs updated, it still has Minister Baloy's face on it. So if we go back, that is almost 10 years, and we have to update it at the moment. But we can share with members the pocket guide. It's still a very efficient and very effective tool for people to use. In terms of what happens with public servants, the trailblazers, we have the legislation in place. I think it's section, if someone can please check for me, section 40 or 44 of the public service regulations allow departments to have special, whether it's monetary or other awards for public servants that come up with innovation. So there is a mechanism to reward more than just a thank you. In terms of projects, I've reported on the two projects that that we have not been able to deliver on before. Those are the two projects that got stalled due to the permissions. I would not use the word frozen because it is just a delay in delivery. The last question, Chair, I'm not sure.
You know why I'm asking them? When you report, you listen to your colleagues, you are there. when we were at Mount Zion, in that meeting, we are hoping to be number one. So then you can't come today and say that. You can't do that. But the point I'm trying to have is make sure that when you close your fourth one, what you have said last time and this time should match.
No, I follow it, Chair. I would prefer not responding to that because that was not the word that I would have used in that meeting either. I can give the assurance to the Chair that what I presented here has gone through internal audit. So it's just the external audit that needs to go. In terms of the slash fund, Chair, I'm not sure what you are referring to because our CFO does not have a slash fund. I wish she had, but we don't have a slash fund. We have funds allocated to Program 1, which is used according to the spending patterns. Other than that, there are no funds that we have. We are working on developing a fund for innovation, but that fund may not necessarily reside with CKSI. It may reside with National Treasury, and that funding mechanism would provide the opportunity for us to test and pilot within departments, because most departments tell us that they don't have the funding to start something new. For example, the pharmacy automation, 20 million for Kristani Baragwan, they just don't have the money. But it will bring savings of more than 20 million within the first year or two of implementing that. So that funding is earmarked for these kind of larger projects that even the CPSI doesn't have the money for. But we're not talking about money residing with the CPSI necessarily. And currently, unfortunately, there's no funding additional that we have.
Thank you
so
much.
Thank you, Chair.
And while you are working on strategies so that you allow the activity to come forward, particularly if you can get the notes of the 26th of February and email them to CPSI, the name of the DMI, might have
In fact, I'm going to request during chair that Ms. said, the DDG administration is the Rashani Dutt, a major presentation, and I can just very briefly explain why. When I make a presentation, I like to talk through the slide rather than read from the slide. And I just want to see the presentation to allow me to get in the next time I will do the presentation. Yes. And then, but in her presentation, she will create that link to show how the shortcomings, if there were any, of the 1718 year performance will be made up for in the 1819 ATP. And she will address the issue of people that are acting in the department, because we have a process in place right now to try and address those issues. And I'll make sure that she makes a reference to that situation. And I think without wasting time, Chair, if you allow me, I hand over to Michelle.
I will go through the presentation. Some of the slides I will just present, because that I think is just, I'm sure the colleagues are aware of. By way of introduction, I think the issues that the ACG has raised, I will touch on them even though they're not necessarily catch up in our presentation. What we are indicating is the overview of the strategic plan, which I will skip and just focus on the 2019 annual performance plan, and the CFO will take us through the budget allocation. We tabled our strategic plan in March 2015 for the period ending 2020. We have never revised our strategic plan. Pay for the strategic objectives that we have had to revise based on the changes in the annual target for the year. I will skip through this one, just giving a sense of where we draw the strategic plan from, which is in the main, the National Development Plan, which is translated to the NPSF in the specific strategic objectives over a 5-year period. I'll skip the constitutional and legislative mandate of the department, which I'm sure you are aware is brought from the Constitution, the Public Service Act, as well as the Public Administration Management Act of 2014. These are the strategic goals as they are captured in our strategic plan, brought from the SDP and in particular the NPSF. Just to indicate that for this financial year, we have 40 annual targets, and the 17, which is 43% of those targets, come directly from the medium-term strategic framework, and the remainder is drawn from the DPSA's other policy priorities. And maybe before, Chair, I get into the specific program, just to the sense of the issues that we were requested to also touch on, starting with the projected performance for the fourth quarter, which also will include our annual performance. We are going to give this figure with a bit of caution because it's an unaudited performance. We are projecting an achievement of 97% of our annual target, which means only 1% of only one target, which is, translates into 3% is projected not to be achieved. And it's the target that is on the report on the number of young people that have been appointed into internships in the public service. The target will not be achieved because of the delays that we've had in terms of collecting information from departments, and that is therefore affecting the data validation for us to be able to produce the report. However, the report will be produced in April, by the end of April, because for it to have been achieved for the financial year, we need to produce that report by the end of March. Similarly, our projected performance against the expenditure of the budget, we are also projecting a 97% expenditure, which is also unaudited, which at least shows an alignment between our APT performance and our budget performance. So we're projecting both to be 97%. In terms of the vacancy rate of the DPSA, we're sitting at 13.82, with a total number of vacancies of 69. The interventions that the FTG alluded to in terms of our vacancy rate is that we are in the process of actually reflecting the true vacancy rate. I think as the other institutions have indicated, our compensation budget over the years has been significantly reduced. We had undertaken a process of requesting that some of our posts be unfunded so that we can be able to remove them for talking about the person's business studio of our actual vacancy. So we are undergoing that process now, where we are requesting for SMS that we unfund and abolish those posts, and for levels below 12 for the DG to do that. So we should be able, once we conclude with that process, be reflecting a vacancy rate of under 10% in the department. In terms of SMS women, we are looking at 41% against the 50% national target, and our disability percentage is 3.25, which is slightly above the target at 2%. And just a broad overview of those stats for the public service. The vacancy rate for the public service is at 9.79% as of December. The report, the first biannual report, will be produced this year around June. In terms of women at SMS level, it's 41.3%. And our disability target, we are well beyond, below the 2%, it's sitting at 0.78%. The one report that was produced, Chair, I'm not sure if the committee has access to the report, a detailed report on the status of gender disability targets for the public service. There are five of the quarter this year. We can make that report available because it gives the detail and an analysis in that regard. So if I can go back then to our ATP program one, I think as the community will be aware by now, it's mainly a compliance issue around our financial management. The new target that we have introduced is the one where we are going to report on the compliance with our the data level of contributor, and we will be reporting on that to the accounting officer on as a new performance target. The rest is the includes our own reporting on the APT to Parliament and to the other control points such as National Treasury and Economy, and the internal audit work that we report to the audit committee. And we also do our own internal assessment of our compliance to the different districts, including financial management, human resources, and negotiations. And then we also do a reporting on our bilateral and multilateral agreements and engagements. In terms of program two, the work that we'll be focusing on as priority projects is continuing consultations on the draft strategic framework for Northern Standard with the Center of Government Department, which includes COP and National Treasury and GPSE. We'll also be doing a business case research report on the legislative instrument structure functions, which is going to inform the operationalization of the Office of Standards in terms of the PAPA, which is the Public Administration Management Act. We'll also be doing monitoring to check the compliance of selected the public service norms and standards by nine departments. and we'll also be doing the draft proposed model for the configuration of the center of national government. And the consultations on the white paper on the transformation and modernization of the public service, and the productivity management tool, which has been a target that has been in our plan for the past 3 years, and is part of the MTSF target. And the seventh target is also a target that we've had in our plan for the past 3 years or so, and it's on the organizational functionality assessment tool, which I think begins to address some of the challenges that have been identified by the committee as well as the AG, where there's a concern that we only assess the performance of departments based on individuals, the officials and the DG, but there's no comprehensive assessment of the functionality of the entire department. And I know one of the key issues was that the performance bonuses that we pay in, are they actually justified if you compare the total performance of the department vis-a-vis the individual ones? So both the tool, which is the functionality assessment, the offer, as well as the productivity management mechanisms that we'll be introducing to get a complete picture of the actual performance of departments. Program 3 is an ongoing target number 1, which is reporting against the target at 10% in terms of the vacancy rate. I know that in the December 2017, we were slightly below the percentage that is targeted, red indicated earlier, it was around 9.8%. And the comprehensive report set up by other reports, which a greater sense of why we are sitting where we are and what are some of the challenges with regards to the feeling of vacant posts and the amount of time that it's taking departments to fill their posts. I think as of December it was taking 8 months to fill vacant posts against the targeted 6 months. And then we also will be continuing with the work on the implementation of the revised senior management performance management and development system, commonly known as the PMDS. The system was approved, I think, towards the end of last year, and the department is engaging on advocacy and capacity building processes to help departments to be able to implement the new system. And following that, we then did the ongoing monitoring of the implementation to identify how departments are receiving the system and how whether they are able to implement it as it envisaged, and to also identify what other ongoing capacity building or advice is required to help departments implement. The work on the graduate team continues, and the focus will also be looking at helping the departments to be able to implement the scheme by the monitoring of how the scheme is actually being implemented. As indicated, it's an MTSF target. And this target number 4, it was before captured as reporting on the appointment of young people into internships, entrepreneurships, and the wording has been changed to talk to developmental programs, because there's more than internships and entrepreneurship opportunities that young people are participating in the public service. So the wording has changed in this ATP, but it still refers to those opportunities that young people are recruited into the public service. So we continue to produce biannual reports to get a sense of the number of young people that have been appointed against the targeted 10,000 a year, and we also reflect in the report how many of those young people have actually been permanently absorbed into the public service, and how many of them have found opportunities outside of the public service. The work on monitoring the discipline management within the public service also continues through our monitoring and reporting to cabinet and to foresight on how departments are doing against the targeted 90 days. In 2013 cabinet also approved the pool of investigators and chairpersons. So these are the support that we've given to the department to help them to meet the 90 days as targeted and to be able to deal with whatever challenges that they're experiencing and that which affect them not being able to resolve their disciplinary cases within the prescribed timeframe. We also are continuing to implement the government the housing scheme. I think a good development this year has been that we, over the past 3 years, have been struggling to get Treasury to give us funding for the housing scheme. Last year, I think we were given an allocation of $3 million, but for this year going forward, we've been given an allocation of about $24 million. I think the CFO will talk to that. That will greatly assist in making sure that the unit is fully capacitated to be able to implement what was agreed on as part of the PSC disease resolution. Program 4, compared to the last APT, we have introduced a number of new targets. The first one being the public service digitalization strategic framework, which is going to include work around the e-government, as well as ensuring that we are able to ensure the interoperability of government systems, but also to improve e-government in terms of government in relation to government to government, government to business. So I think it's an exciting project that we have been struggling over the years to kick off, and it's one of the projects that the minister is very passionate about, and the intention is to make sure that we finally optimize the use of technology in the delivery of government services, but also in terms of how public administration is done in terms of reporting, monitoring, as well as planning. We are also looking at having a policy on the cloud policy, because over the years it has been difficult. I think there has been a lot of disagreement about using the cloud in government. There was often a number of issues like the security issues. So this year we are beginning looking at the policy to be able to move government into using the cloud as part of its IT. We are also continuing to look at the issue of IT procurement, which is linked to the next target, number 4. We want to optimize the ICT based management in the public service. I think one of the biggest things in government currently is how the amount of money that is spent on ICT. But if you look at how we are using ICT, it doesn't match. So part of what we're trying to do is to use government buying muscle to be able to get better value in terms of our ICT procurement. The work on the ICT security assessment standard is work that has been raised by the AG for a number of years now, and in the past 2 to 3 years we've done quite a lot in terms of improving ICT security. It's now being assessed through a number of assessments, including MPEC and the DPSA that assesses the standards against which departments have been measured. Similarly to the corporate government ICT framework, which has been in place for a number of years now, we are looking at revising the framework as well as the developing standards against which the departments are going to be assessed by both the DPSA and other assessment institutions. Service delivery support, this work has been ongoing for the past 3 years or so, so we continue supporting departments and also reporting on how they are implementing the operations management framework. The target for the NGFF is 3 departments by 2019, so every year incremental, we work with 3 departments to reach the target. And after the 12 departments, then the framework will be implemented across the remainder of the departments. And we also will be doing work on the service centers, which will include concerned have that the intention there is to develop a framework for the establishment, promotion, and the maintenance of service centers, and to make sure that there's alignment between the different models. I know the committee has told the PSA to stop talking about the Mabuena Hospital Center, which is the intention was to use the model to see how you can improve the implementation, the maintenance, and the operations of other centers. So that work is going to influence the development of this framework to make sure that there's standardization across the different centers, service centers. But really, the standard is a project that started about 2 years ago from a need to make sure that budget really becomes a tangible thing, not just things that are put on the wall. So the MTSF has developed standards that how do you assess that a department is implementing value for money, issues of courtesy and all of that. So the standards have been developed so that citizens themselves can also be able to hold government departments accountable for the delivery of the budgetary principles. So that will continue. And the focus going forward is to actually assess whether or not departments are implementing the standard, but also to get the citizens to comment on their experience and the value that they're deriving from the improvement in the implementation of the principles. The new target for this year is the issue around the public service charter. As you are aware, the charter was signed quite a few years ago between the government, labor, and other agencies, but there's never been a concerted effort to actually assess the implementation of the new target in our APT, and we are going to start assessing whether the public service charter is actually being implemented and what is the impact on the delivery of services to citizens. APRM has been off our HP for quite a while due to the funding challenges. We have received a little bit of money, and even though we won't be doing the second generation review process due to the amount of money that is required to achieve that, the bit of the money that we are getting is helping us to help the time to prepare for the second generation review. So there will be consultations, and we'll be working towards consultations with communities and other stakeholders in preparation for the second generation review. And the work on the community development workers program will come back into our agency. We were doing their work behind the scenes of our plan. But the minister has indicated that we also need to work towards speeding up finalizing the framework on the implementation of the CDW program to address some of the standing challenges around the proper location of the CDW so that we work towards resolving all those outstanding issues that the committee is aware of. The last program, all of the targets that we've reflected here, they don't necessarily mean that all that the program is doing, but it's all the projects that are linked to the NDP and our the MTSF. And it's the ongoing work around the assessing how national and provincial departments are adhering to the implementation of the Directive on Public Administration and Management Delegation. And it's looking at whether when departments develop their delegations, the executive authority to DG delegations and DG delegations to other performer levels, whether there is adherence to that. I think some of the challenges that have been raised today to some extent talk about the problems that we still have around delegations within the public service. So we continue to monitor that and to make the relevant recommendations to cabinet and other reporting points to address some of the ongoing challenges that we still experience on delegation. The target, second one, we started implementing it about 2 years ago, and it was raised in the MTSF around the lack of mentoring and peer support for senior managers in the public service by other senior managers. So we have been piloting this guideline, and the intention is that once we've gained the lessons, we'll be able to review the guideline and ensure that it's implemented across the public service. Because I think one of the challenges with senior managers is that they already get an opportunity to go and study. But there was a recognition that we have all public servants that have been in management still within departments, and that there needs to be a concerted effort to make sure that senior managers are being guided and mentored, and not necessarily have to go out of the department to enroll in courses, but to have on the job mentoring and guidance. So that framework is very targeted towards that. This is also a target that we've been reporting on for the past few years. The minister this year has requested that we look at doing more work or more analysis over and above looking at the average number of years that agencies spend in the course, but to actually do a deep analysis as to why is that happening and what is the impact of that on the issue of the stability of departments in DGs or agencies leave without completing their 5-year contract. So that those could be some of the things that when we talk about the stability of the public service, the political and administrative interface, we can be able to look deeper than just saying we have 20 DGs and 20 of them have spent 2.5 years without actually looking and analyzing the reasons of why that is happening. We then are also assessing departments based on how, for example, departments are performing against MPAT in terms of HR, which has been a serious problem over the years. I think the average performance has been 2.5, which is below the 3, the score of 3. So DPSA through the MPSF has been given the task of making sure that we give support to departments so that they're able to strengthen their internal HR. And then the last target, we are looking at reporting on the adherence by designated employees to the legislative framework regarding electronic disclosure. As the committee is aware, over the past few years, e-disclosure has only been limited to the SMS. There's been other employees or groups of employees that have been designated, and as a result, the system is going to be broadened, so that other categories of employees can also begin to disclose their financial interest on the disclosure system. I will end with that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Chair.
Chair, if I can quickly give the CFO to give a very broad overview of the budget.
Oh, yeah, you can just cover that.
Yes. Most of the programs are allocated under administration,
this includes the ministry, the DG's office, corporate spaces, internal audit, legal services, international relations, as well as office accommodation. Those are budgeted under program one. The one thing that I want to highlight is program three, which is public services, employment, and condition of services. If you look at all the programs, there's a slight increase between 2018 to 2020 due to CPI sort of projections. But if you look at the public services, employment, and condition of services, there's a budget of 82 million on the next year. But when you look at the second year, it goes down to 78 million and goes up again in 2020. The reason for that is that that program includes the government employee housing scheme, which for the first time this year, in 2018-19, has been allocated 24 million, as Linda has indicated. That increased drastically the baseline for that program for 2018. And then in 2019, the budget for the same government went down by 216 million, and goes up in 2020 by 18 million. So that makes the difference in terms of the trend, that is not the same with the other programs. When we go down to the slide, we indicate the budget for entities, CPSI, National School of Government, as well as public commission, they have already presented. Those are the allocation that is indicated, and the transfer is made to this entity in terms of section 128J of the PSMA. This slide is just a pie chart that indicates the how the budget is spread within the entire board. If you look at it, 28% of the votes budget goes to Public Service Commission, which is an amount of 264 million. So that the biggest chunk goes there. And then the second one is administration with the DPSA program, which is 238 million. And completing the top three is 18%, which goes to National School of Government, which is 168 million, and the rest indicated in terms of percentage. The last slide, Chair, Honorable Chair, is we indicate information in terms of the allocation per classification. The compensation of employees, we see, takes about 81% of the entire budget of the board, which is 288 million, and it goes to 333 million over the NTF period. Goods and services, which is operational budget, takes about 20% of the budget, at 191 million, and goes over to 205 over the NTF period. Transfers and subsidies is the one that takes a big chunk of the budget, which is transferred to entities at 49%, which is 121 million, and goes up to 131 million. Last issue, I just want to indicate in terms of the payments to suppliers within 30 days, DPSA complies to treasury regulations, and just that all our payments in the past financial year up to current have been done within 30 days. In fact, our average payment period is about between 9 and 12 days for all the payments. We do, however, in the last month we got about three invoices, which are disputed invoices, which is still verifying whether the service is being rendered correctly. So those disputed invoices do not fall part of the non-compliance, as long as you've got proof that you are engaging the supplier. But otherwise, back to financial aid, up to current, all our payments are made within 30 days. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Thank you so much, honorable members, for us now to engage honorable W called by honorable Duwazana, Porta, and honorable Zell. Oh, honorable Junior Student, honorable Robert.
Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I just wanted clarity on slide 9. You said in the beginning 40 annual targets, and of the 40, 17 comes from 2014 to 2019 medium term strategic framework. Now, are you saying that the rest are out of that framework? I'm not sure why you said that the 17 of the 40 comes from 2014 to 2019. But, you know, we have finished with 2018-19 yet, so where does the other target come from? And I missed some of the things that you said before Program 1. I think you read it, but it's not here. Like the equity, the disability, so if that page can also be sent to me, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chair, I will request this, because I will be putting on those speakers, that the CFO writes down whatever that I'm going to request clarity, and then it finished all the information for us, because when you ask about the speakers, the person might not have the answer in front of you. So, because I'm picking up some information as the main division is concerned of the budget of the department. So, I am from all the problem, I started problem administration. According to the main division, we gave them 248 million. They arrived when they say that the budget, what we have put in, there is correct according to the main division, but it doesn't tell us that it is the very same appropriated fund he made the lateral transfers. Because the main division says there are transfers, and this transfer they went to 811,000. But the CFO doesn't tell us anything about the transfers. The only transfers we see are those main entities. We don't see where did the 811,000 according to what the main division is saying. We see 471,000 will be taken into transfer, 1,000 will be transferred, 10,000 now according to the main division. Yes. So the some saying, can the CFO write and tell us where is this money going, where is it? Exactly where is it? Because what is there is just the number of the main division. But there are transfers that we've done, and we don't see its activities, we don't see in whose properties it is, where it is floating. Now, and then you go to the next program, the policy development research, which is correct according to the main division 24, but there's also an 8,000 which is transferred, and the appropriation says, and you don't know where it is going. Now, you look at program number 5. Program number 5, according to the main division, it says 257,577,000 rand. And it, according to the appropriation, it puts an asterisk saying that it is exclusive, you can't touch it, it is as is, you will never take it. So in other words, it's for the CPSI, it's for the School of Governance, 257 million. However, though, they have to transfer that to 06438 36, on and on. But there is also a 1.441 million that is also missing, and we need to know, because we have appropriated it, where exactly it is, what is it doing, or what is it going to do. Problem number 6. Governance of public administration. There's a transfer of 472,000. Where is it? Because where did it go? What is it going to do? So these are outstanding numbers, these are the outstanding transfers which were requested by the department that they need this money, however we shall transfer it. Now tell us what activities do we cover? You never understand it if you don't have a schedule in front of you. That's why I'm requesting the CFO to please, by Tuesday, it must reach your desk. Thank you.
Thank you.
and tell us about this money that you don't see in here.
Thank you. Okay, honorable colleague.
Thank you very much, and thanks for representing us. I want to speak of two issues, Chairperson. Firstly, with regard to the housing, employee housing schemes, I wanted to know if there are challenges there on implementation, and if yes, there are, how are they going to be resolved? The other issue, when she was presenting, she spoke of my understanding was that there are certain posts that need to be to freeze. Then I wanted to know what are the categories of such posts, and to further check as to whether does this mean that you are planning to review your organogram, or have you already reviewed your organogram? And to also check when she was to conclude, she also spoke again about the vacant post. So it's where I got confused when now there are those that need to freeze. And those that are funded. But now we were got back and forth. I'm failing to to marry these two statements. When I try to marry them, they just get divorced before I finish marrying them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. Chairperson, some years ago, we had an engagement with the current acting DDG about the allocation of the CPSI. That it needs to be increased because of its strategic significance to the department. I think time has come now, acting DDG, to attend. And then secondly, it seems to be a trend at national level that the salaries are too exorbitant, because they go well beyond the 35% threshold of the budget. It's a matter that is of serious concern as well. Because one of them would expect that the national department becomes exemplary, especially to the local departments in the provinces. So if we would try to lead by example, much better. That's the last thing. You would remember that there was this project about the integration of the PESA and the IFMS. This project is still pending. Information has not been forthcoming since the project was shelved, and the 1.2 billion paid to the overseas company. We have dealt with this thing with the National Treasury. We fielded questions to them, but they have never came back to us with the answers, even though SCOPA did to the issue as well. So I'm just saying, it still has to come back to us, Chairperson, so that we deal with it to its finality. And also aware that this project seems to have been resuscitated. We'd like to know what are the conditions going forward with this project. I really am concerned with this one, Chair.
Well, that's why we call it a special project.
Thank you, Chair. I've read a lot. I've noticed a lot of things, and I think I read recently that there are hundreds, if not thousands, I think it's 8,000, I'm not sure about the numbers, of government employees doing business with government. And in spite of there being legislation preventing it or prohibiting it, I would like to know what the state of affairs is and what are the challenges you're experiencing in dealing with this particular problem. Thank you, Chair.
There is something I'd like to say, but I'll say it offline this time.
Are you sure? Okay, thank you. DT, acting DT only, from my side, COVID building up from the 50% of the line item for another one to another. Can you possibly probably not necessarily based on what you have presented, but based on what you really have in the department, to give us the breakdown of the budget with the line item. What one would like to see, just to remind our mind, the budget allocation on consultants. You recall, Honorable Matibadana, that 2016, when she joined the committee, was that there was about 34 million that was allocated to consultants, to HR related matters, which the response was that that 34 million is allocated to ensure that when there are cases like this, as the department, we are able then to have to use that budget. And we are saying that it cannot be where the department can budget for disciplinary cases and defend themselves on issues that they know they are going to do the cases on. Just one example, the one that I raised with the DM earlier on here, and she brushed over in her report. That you suspend a person, let alone that you follow, due process that has been followed or not followed is not our business, that's what. But to bring back that person, what does this mean in money terms? If that person had a guard or self-confidence to go to court and challenge us, how much are we going to pay the government? I would still like to see that line item waived in the real sense what you've got in your office, not what you're giving us. Because the AG is going to pick it up. COPPA is going to pick it up. And you'll be in trouble with us because we're not going to pick it up. But there are other number of other issues. But also building on Leon Flo's question as well, that I'm sure you are in collaboration with Public Service Commission. In terms of e-disclosure, which is a ticking box, that's one. But it doesn't give us a true reflection in terms of what is doing. For example, the department that is called public works, where a senior management works for the department, and the same work body also is a consultant to the department, and gives in fact the javelin of a very cruel, clumsy site, I must say. Fortunately, within this quarter, we'll be also meeting public going to give us an update in some areas that we're engaging with them today. But I'm saying that when we are saying that, even in the SONA, the ministers, the president, in terms of dealing with the eradication of corruption in the public services as well, we only focus on the detail on the senior management. But the meeting management is also sometimes go for leave. When they go to the bathroom, they close the offices and nothing can move. And we must start looking at those things. Because not only politicians that are corrupt, somebody asks them administratively to process that. and we are saying as public administration for Telkom, we are interested in those people. Other institutions will deal with other people. Because we cannot where we are able to pay for service providers, but are those service providers that are being paid? And what relationship is there? We're not accusing anyone because we don't have a scientific evidence of that, but we have been receiving reports on that school. The other one also, Ms. Linda, that you spoke to is what Honorable Kosa has raised in terms of abolishing and creating new posts or reorganizing the structure. By the way, we know that we are not, as a particular committee, legally speaking, we are not approving the structure of government. But it has to come, we are one of the stakeholders that needs also to be protected. And you can't miss that process without coming to us. And I hope you are going to do that. Because it impacts also on what we've got in our minds, how we think the public service structure must look like. Because if you are only restructuring BPSA, we are sending a message that says that that's how you intend the other departments to look like. So you are not looking at yourself only, but you are piloting yourself for the entire public service space as well. And also the other one that you need to tell us, in those posts that we have been, funded posts that we have abolished, which means the way I'm sitting, there must be obviously some savings there. What do you do with those savings? I might be wrong, I don't know. Because I don't know how your structure and the warm bodies and the funded and unfunded posts, it looks like now. But also you can't continue asking each and every 3 years in country and review the structure. As you come on, you come with a new innovation and this nothing as we said, and you change. We only have 5 years, all of us. So I'm saying even that call, which means government in terms of the core mandate, it just comes to a standstill. We are raising some of these issues not only for DPSA, for all departments, because we are also public service providers to other departments. We can talk to the rest in terms of the IMS and also the contact of that or in terms of the program will be seen you in this time of this kind of that. But it's raising so that as new aircraft now, you are aware that when you come back you're not going to tell us that you're not raising what you're already raising today. The other one that is on the program also is a stainwork issue. The shares are dropping down, they are being registered from the stock exchange and all that, but the most important one from that in relation to that item is that what does its implication financially to the public servants in particular? What we're interested to all employees within our country, but in particular them. And I'm really worried. So I'm saying that you must get hold of the multi-committee secretary, which is one of them, to give you the report and the discussions in that level of the four committee meeting that we had, the last two ones, so that you can pick up those ones and also then engage pension fund, government, the public service pension fund. Because the last time they reported to us, they said not going to be affected, but so on, the way I've seen financial and the way and the speed still works shared and resigning off and they're appointing a new board, you don't know what is going to happen and what is going to happen in our money. I know it's invented by PIC, but us here we've got a big issue to stay in that space. If you make it too far, then
if I may also just request that maybe as part of the things that when the department they are here, we can request the relevant entities to address the issue of the government employees doing business with the state, because the question I think is very specific in terms of what the member has raised about the particular number. Because there's also that the department does an interface with the AG.
when they do pick up those things. So I think it would be better to give a much more detailed answer that is related to the specific cases. We'd also be able to just give a general thing. I think on the issue of the pension fund and the CMO will also be able to refer it to the relevant teaching that in the areas that are related to that. Yeah, I was not going to be able to talk very consistently on the IFMS issue. Safe to say that we had a meeting with Treasury where we've also raised our concerns with DPSA growth and managing IFMS with great difficulty. What they have informed us is IFMS 2 that is coming, where the implementation will start in June. Our minister in particular has also requested that we engage the Minister of Finance just to raise, I think, some of the concerns that the committee might have about IFMS as well. So it's a matter that even at the level of our minister, we are engaging with. But as to the actual details, because IFMS is the name is a treasury between the department, DPSA has only contributed to the development of the HR module, which is the part of the core module, I think, of IFMS. The issue about of those who can the salary bill, which I think the indication that DPSA is also guilty of, I would like to think to link that in answering the question around our own vacant posts and the posts that need to be frozen and so forth. What I was indicating, Chair, is that we do have vacant posts in the department. I indicated the percentage, I think it's 13%. What I was indicating is that whilst we do have vacant posts, the issue is that because of the challenges with the compensation budget, we will not be able to fill all those vacant posts. So hence what we've done is we've identified posts that need to be abolished because we will not be able to fill them. And the purpose of having them abolished is that we then will be able to remove them from the fund. Because until they are abolished, we can't remove them from the fund. So we do have vacant posts. We are in the process of having some of them abolished. The question was, what categories? It's both SMS posts as well as below SMS posts. So it's from level 1 up until level 10. So let me just say.
Yes.
Looking at the mandate of the department.